fucking Joss Whedon!
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. In this episode, we talk with Laura Okagaki-Brasper about mycology and microbiology, and I forget to introduce us or give the email addresses at the end.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. Today we're talking with Laura Okagaki-Brasper, who is a friend of me and Nick's and Tim's, and we're just going to talk to her about all kinds of awesome stuff, science girl geeky stuff. So welcome, Laura.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Glad to have you.
Awesome. So what is it that you do? What is your job title?
So I just finished my PhD in medical mycology, which is studying the fungi that make humans sick. Hmm. So I was working on a fungus called Cryptococcus neoformans, which causes lung infections, but ultimately causes meningitis, which kills a lot of people, especially people with HIV.
Yeah.
So, just finished that up. I'm moving on to greener pastures.
And right now you work at the U?
I just finished up at the U. Yeah.
And where are you going?
MICAB.
Yep, in the MICAB program, which is microbiology, immunology, and cancer biology. And I'm heading to UNC, University of North Carolina, to study another fungus called histoplasma, which is actually funny that I'm going there to do it, because it's actually really common in the Mississippi River Valley.
Interesting.
But I have to go to North Carolina to study it.
Sure.
Well, you were saying, before we started, you said North Carolina is like the Jerusalem for your field. Is that, why is that?
There's actually a number of researchers at Duke and at UNC and at NC State, which are all studying medical mycology. One of the kind of pillars of our field is at Duke, and has kind of spread within Duke and the area of, and has nurtured many medical mycologists in the area.
Spread so. like a fungus.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Creepy underground.
That's
fungus.
Awesome.
Sure.
That's excellent. So, okay, so you guys, you had to go to a lot of school.
Yep.
For this. So at what point in your many years of schooling, whether you were, when you were littler or older, like, did you decide that you wanted to go into research medicine and, or, you know, biology and then mycology more specifically?
Well, I actually have two undergraduate degrees. The first one is in photography, so I actually have a Bachelor's of Fine Arts, which was really not the most useful degree.
That's all right, I have a theater degree, seriously. Yeah.
So, you know, I went back to school for, I got a second undergraduate degree in genetics. And actually I had planned on going to medical school, and I decided I didn't really, no offense to any physicians out there, didn't really like the people that I realized I'd be hanging out with.
They're probably not listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because see, no physicians and atheists, they already think they're God.
Not surgeons.
No surgeons.
Yeah. No, I totally.
I'm sorry, any physician, I was just making fun of you because it was fun. It's all, I'm sorry. Really.
That same thing happened to me with my master's program. I didn't like the people in my cohort, so I was like, I'm not going to enjoy.
It's a very different, and it's a different way of thinking, and it's just a different way of acting, and I didn't really like that.
Yeah.
And I had an interim year in between finishing my degree in graduate school where I was in a virology lab studying herpes.
Oh, awesome. But I mean, not just genital herpes, I'm assuming, like, zoster and all of it, shingles and cold sores.
It's cold sores.
Yeah.
It was herpes simplex virus, just the cold sore one. Which
interesting.
Which is becoming, of course, more common down there.
And so
when I started graduate school, I did a rotation in, we do lab rotations, 10-week rotations, and I did one in bacteriology, environmental bacteriology, which is cool stuff, but it was totally not my thing. I did another one in a different type of herpes virus, which is cytomegalovirus. And it was interesting, but then we had a new faculty member that was doing some really cool work in fungal biology, and I talked to her about doing a rotation. I ended up doing a rotation, and like 2 weeks into it, I knew I was going to be there.
That's awesome.
So,
I think when you find a really good fit like that, it's so great. I imagine it's even more so in like research sciences, where there's so many niche places you could end up.
Yeah, and you don't realize how far ahead you have to think until you are faced with that decision of, okay, what's the field going to be like when I get out? What am I going to do? I mean, you have to decide what you want to do kind of when you start.
It's an investment. It's a real big time investment.
It's strategic.
Yeah.
Same thing with a postdoc, which is what I'm heading towards now. Mm-hmm. You have to think about, well, is this something that's interesting to study? What can I study about it? How many people are studying it? Am I going to be able to get funding for it? You know, what am I going to learn from doing it? So,
it almost sounds like you should get, like, a minor in business, like, to plan.
Yeah, I thought that they should be teaching more business and management courses.
Oh, sure.
They don't teach any management, which is stupid because you basically end up being a small business owner.
Oh, sure.
You're, when you're done. And
running lab.
And it's really difficult to mentor people or manage people.
Yeah.
When you don't know how to do it, when you've never been taught how to do it. You just have to learn from, like, what you've seen other people do.
Well, and managing people is definitely a skill. It's absolutely not something that's innate to anybody. You have to know what you're doing.
And really, I think, hard. In the sciences, most people don't have that skill.
Right.
Because that's not something that they really have ever focused on.
People might even be more prone to social awkwardness, which can make that part kind
of
work.
I think that's a stereotype.
Yeah.
Scientists.
Yeah.
I actually don't think the majority of scientists are very socially awkward. In fact, you have to be incredibly social to be successful. And
just
part
the
of the
communication.
And it's part of it is communication, and part of it is being able to communicate what you do to get grants.
And I would assume very little research you do on your own. You almost all of it you're doing with a team of people.
Yep. Yeah, and you do with collaborators. But when you go to meetings, you know, you're sitting there and you're in a room full of like 200 other scientists, and the way you expand your career, just like anywhere else, is you network. And you have to be social. You have to.
Right.
Especially as a graduate student, nobody knows who you are. Nobody gives a crap who you are. They kind of know who you are maybe by who you're working for, but you have to go out of your way to go up and introduce yourself to people and, you know, make it a point that they know who you are. And that's what got me the postdoc that I did, was because I have no problem with just going up to people, at least for some reason at scientific meetings and other kinds of meetings like convergence. It's a little more uncomfortable for me, but you know, someplace like a scientific meeting, I can usually just walk up to somebody and introduce myself and ask them what they're working on and things like that. But you have to be able to do that.
Do you feel like it's something that you, and since you say that you have more difficulty in social, like with convergence type places, do you think because it's for work, you can just turn it on and like, you're scientist Dr. Laura right now? You're not like just Laura the chick? Like, because I have that with, I work for Fantasy Flight, and I'm in sales, so I have to go to a lot of trade shows, and I don't like talking to strangers, just in general, I don't enjoy it, sorry strangers, but I just don't, so like, it makes me,
apologize to them, they're strangers.
It makes me uncomfortable, and like, meeting new people is like my least favorite thing, but like, I have to for work, but I get myself in this mindset of like, right now I am the sales office, you know, Molly, and not normal me.
I think part of it is I've spent, you know, so there's, in science, especially with women scientists, there's this fraud syndrome that I think a lot of people have, which is you don't ever really think you're there, right? You never really think you're... You always wonder, when are they going to figure me out? Right?
Sure.
And this is actually a huge problem in our field. I mean, in all the research fields. There have been a number of articles written about it recently, but almost everybody has this, like, oh my God, when are they going to figure out...
Is it like... You feel like because of your gender, like a mistake would be taken as like you getting canned more easily, seen as laughable more easily, or something.
I think it's a respect. You know, you work really hard to garner respect in the field,
I'm in a male dominated field. I hear you. Yeah.
And I think it's with everyone because everybody has to work hard, right? Mm-hmm. But I think women have a tendency to just. I don't know if it's just the way we're built or the way we develop, you know, we're fighting for science from when we're about 10 years old. If you're interested in science, you have to fight all the way through
it. It's true.
Because everybody's going to tell you that science isn't something that you should go into because you're a girl.
Or it's just, even if they are super encouraging and everyone's got your back 100%, you are still going to be in the very minority of people.
There's not a ton of role models right now.
Yeah.
And there's
hopefully that's changing, but...
Yeah.
But when you talk about famous scientists throughout history, you know, there aren't a lot of women that you can point to as examples.
Or there are, but people just aren't exposed to them and can't name them as readily.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an education and exposure issue as well.
There aren't a ton of women that work in the gaming industry, at all. But the thing is, like, it's not because, you know, people are saying women can't or you shouldn't. It's just that there's just not that interest. And they just don't fall into those jobs as often.
Yeah, and, you know, I think... You know, there's a certain amount of that, and there's a certain amount of, and I just, we see that there's a lot of ego in science as well, and it's a how easily are we able to to keep up our ego as we're going through science.
Sure.
And for me, you know, I started out being really kind of uncomfortable and shy, and but I got thrown into my first meeting that I ever went to was like 1,200 people, which is a pretty good sized meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anyone.
Pretty big. Yeah,
I didn't know anyone. This is my second year of grad school. I literally knew no one.
Oh.
And my advisor who I went with brought her family, so she wasn't around most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of had to fend for myself at this new meeting.
Oh my gosh.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I got to know people, I would make sure I'd, you know, continue to talk to them at meetings. And, you know, by the end, it's like, you know, most people knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was getting recruited to places because of that. You know, in a place like Convergence, I think there's this mentality of, you know, I never feel like I'm quite geeky enough, and I think
that's adorable.
Well, there's this like, you know, and you've
yeah,
written
no.
about it recently.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not, you know, if you don't spend X number of hours playing World of Warcraft, you're not really a geek.
Sure.
And, whereas I, you know, I kind of skim the surface of everything. I'm not a hardcore.
Sure. You're an actual, real, I mean, you're a professional, geek nerd, like
yeah. Your field, your education, your...
For other people, there's hobbies that they have, and they're interested in the thing that you're doing all the time. You know, like, that's...
You're
where
like
they,
an actual
they like to read
bonafide
articles.
Nerd.
Yeah, but when you step into a place like Convergence,
oh, sure.
It's like, you know, okay, I can't name... I can't tell you what's wrong with your Boba Fett costume. Scratch right here is
there's,
off.
There's
I
definitely
don't know
a
that.
Focus on pop culture at
yeah.
Convergence for sure. Like, absolutely.
Except
more,
in panels.
Except
there
in
is,
panels.
But, you know, the thing that, you know, I always describe myself as a geek of all trades, where it's
yeah.
like, I'm not super, super in-depth geeky about almost anything, but
sure.
I like geek culture. And when somebody's like, oh,
geek.
Dude, you ought to check out this show. I think you'd really enjoy it. And I watch it. I'm like, you're right. I really do enjoy that show. And maybe I only watch a season of it because I get distracted by other things.
Sure.
But I certainly get most of those references. Even if I may not be able to explain to you why the Boba Fett costume's
yeah.
wrong,
yeah.
I at least can tell you that it's a Boba Fett costume. And I probably, probably could even tell you the difference if they were standing right next to me. I could probably tell you which one was a Jango Fett costume and which one was a Boba Fett costume. I could probably do that.
Red and blue.
So you're not colorblind, is what you're telling us.
Yeah,
good
I'm
job.
Not colorblind.
Congratulations.
So, but,
you're
but,
six out of seven men.
But so, I mean, I get that there's that set, that inferiority complex that you go into Convergence, and you're like, well, if somebody shifts to 11 on this particular topic, I'm out in the cold.
Sure.
And so you do feel like a poser. But you know, I think you talk about feeling like a poser, and I think the same thing happens, like, in the comedy community. I think, you know, talking about women in comedy.
Oh, yeah.
There are not that many women in comedy. Jen Scott wrote a really good article about it.
Certainly not in the style of comedy that we are all in. Like, the offensive and improv blue kind
of
stuff, like, doesn't tend to be...
There aren't as many, and
we're lucky.
As Jen wrote, the issue is, you know, that somehow there's this discussion of how making women comedians different than comedians.
Mm-hmm. She's funny, like, for a woman.
Yeah,
that,
it's
that,
just
that
it's like
attitude.
Jen Scott is not funny for a woman. Jen Scott is just funny.
But that's
right.
like the article that I posted on our blog site saying how, like, you know, there's that whole, like, oh, it's a girl who's a geek. And it's like, no, I'm a geek. I'm a comedian.
Yeah,
I'm an atheist. I don't have to be the girl who is, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
There did come a point in time, and it's fairly recent. Honestly, I'm 35, and it's pretty. Only recently have I been able to say, you know what? Take me as I am, or leave me as I am. I'm not gonna spend hours and hours of my time playing, you know, Skyrim just so I can talk about it on Reddit or whatever.
Sure.
You know?
No. Yeah.
I'm not. I just don't. I don't have that time, and I don't have the desire to do that either.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the things that I really love about, like, geek culture is people are very passionate about what they're interested in. And so, like, I feel like most of the time, Tim, like, you're kind of, like, geek of all trades or of all different, you know, pop culture parts is common but less common than people who go to 11 on, like, three or four different things.
Sure.
Like, people who are super fucking into Firefly or people that are super into Star Wars or whatever, and they can tell you all sorts of canon and whatever.
They don't give a shit about Doctor Who.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I think one of the first things. It's like, I have to admit, I don't watch Doctor Who. And I'll tell you why. Because my brother is 8 years older than I am. And when we were kids, he used to watch it every day when I was on PBS. Every afternoon. And it scared the crap out of me. And so as soon as that little, like, the wormhole started
up.
And the music, the sermon started.
Yep.
I haven't been able to watch it since then. Not like really watch
that's,
it.
Same thing. The music starts up. You're like, meh.
Nope. Change the channel.
So I have a question about, so kind of getting back to the other people in your department and just your general, you have a lot of experience meeting other scientists and in your field. Do you feel like there's the majority of them are agnostic, atheist, or do you not know? Does it seem like with kind of that unspoken, like everyone just kind of assumes you are unless you say you are a Christian, which would be opposite from most of the world.
Yeah, you kind of
let's just say theist.
Theist, sure.
I mean, I realize we're in America, so most of them would be Christian.
But theist, yes. Yeah.
And we'll talk about the subpopulation of researchers in the United States that are not from America.
Right, exactly.
Sure. And I think there's, I think to some extent, yes.
Yeah.
We pretty much, I mean, I assume, and a lot of people assume, that that I think most scientists are at least not
apathetic,
so
they just don't care.
They just
lapsed.
Or they go to church because their kids go to church, or
sure.
You know, they're just not super religious,
right?
More cultural than any belief.
And I have found a couple that are. I've had two coworkers now that are. One that was, I mean, this is shocking to me, honestly, and I didn't really get into it too much with him, but he was an intelligent designer.
Oh
wow!
Studying viruses, and I'm like, how can you? And I even asked him, I think point blank, but at one point. How can you say that evolution doesn't exist? We see it every day when we do our experiments.
Right.
Yeah. We can force it to happen.
We're literally making
right.
that happen.
Yeah. And he said, well, I don't deny that that doesn't exist. I just don't think that it happened as much as the science is saying.
He thinks someone designed the mechanism that is evolution, basically. Like,
I don't even know about that.
Yeah.
I think he just thinks that...
I don't understand how you can be in biology. How you can be a biologist and look at that evidence every day and say, well, I'm just going to ignore the part that doesn't fit with my theological perspective.
Because I can
accept somebody saying, all right, the only way I can accept intelligent design personally, the only way I can accept somebody believing in it is if what you're saying is, all right, at some point way the hell back, some designer nudge things in the direction of evolution.
Yeah.
Not even evolution. Just saying, all right, I'm going to set up this place so that life is probable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and here are the rules under which life could happen.
And without
coming up with any idea of what life would result
you could
from
even
that.
Even if you wanted to say that the designer designed the mechanism that is evolution, they designed the process.
Sure.
I don't know how you could say that they were sitting there
in the middle of the process fucking with it, since there's so much evidence that that's not true.
Right.
I wonder if part of it comes from the fact that, scientists are very hard on other scientists' work.
By design,
we are the hardest.
You
have to be.
We have to be. I mean, it's pure
science,
right?
Right.
So you learn how to see the flaws in experiments. And I think, you know, for me, it's there's been enough evidence to overcome any flaws in any one experiment.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for other people, they still see those flaws in those experiments and saying... That's the loophole that they use to get out
they're
of it.
They're so skeptical that there's...
They're not skeptical, they're skepticism.
Doubtful.
Yeah.
Yeah. They use the skepticism, the scientific skepticism that they're trained with to make excuses for something that really doesn't come from a skeptical perspective at all.
It's interesting.
And I think everybody has a different, everybody obviously has a different relationship with, their religion or whatever.
Sure.
And their science as well.
Yeah.
For me, it's just, there's no, and a number of scientists that I've worked closely with, it's just, you just see enough where you just,
this is all there is because you can see it.
Evolution.
You're looking at it.
I trust the physicists enough to know that they know what they're talking about when it comes to the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
I'm not, a huge, I couldn't exactly tell you what it, everything about it, but...
Like, conceptually understand things, but not the nuts and bolts of it.
Right.
But I trust the physicists to do
that. Well, they use science. You trust science.
I trust myself and my science.
Yeah.
Is that a source of frustration for you? I mean, when it comes to physics, I think most people trust physicists.
Yes.
When it comes to biology, there's a huge segment of the population that basically says what you're doing is wrong, and they don't trust you at all.
Especially
even though they have no expertise,
yeah.
They have no expertise in your field, any more than they have expertise in the field of physics. And yet, they don't have any trouble accepting what a physicist tells them.
They have plenty of trouble accepting gravity.
I didn't come from no monkey gravity.
It seems to be the only scientific field that people have more that people who are not experts spend more time questioning is climatologists.
Yep.
I would say psychopharmacology or
brain chemistry,
because there's a lot of people on the internet that are like, oh, you know, they say that I have this, you know, chemical imbalance, like I have bipolar disorder, but I don't think that I need to take this, and I don't think that I need to take this medication.
Or Scientology in general, or any religion anti-medication.
It's like a huge pet peeve. I hate it so much. But getting back to the original
question, is that frustrating? I mean, does that really bug you?
And it does. And, you know, there's, I think, a couple of sides to this. One of them is the general idea of what a scientist is or what the scientific community is. I guarantee you that we don't go to meetings and get together with, you know, our colleagues and say, hey, guys, what are we going to, you know, what kind of crap are we going to tell them this year?
You know? How can we ruin the Christian's day?
Let's tell them this and, like, come up with some absurd thing.
Let's make up a transitional fossil. Come on, let's do it.
Nobody tells us what to study. We decide ourselves what we want to study. We decide ourselves what we want to go into. So if you choose to study one thing, you know, that's your decision. There's no government anything that's telling us that's what you should study and that's what you shouldn't be studying.
Well, and I imagine that as you choose something to study, that study could turn into something different as you're discovering other things and, like, inspiring other things to look for.
Depending on how successful it is, if you have, like, fruitful results, if you actually learn something, that opens six other doors for things to investigate.
Yeah, and actually, so, and a good example of that is the thesis work that I did. I originally started out trying to understand in Cryptococcus, mating type can be considered a virulence factor by a lot of people in our field, trying to figure out why mating type has anything to do with virulence. And what it ended up being was I actually ended up looking at cell morphology, which is the cell shape, specifically cell size, and determined that that this change that it undergoes a change in cell morphology that's helping it to establish infection.
Oh, wow.
And so my work started out completely different than where it ended up. Sure. And definitely, I mean, there's a lot of paths that you can go down. So there's this, like, idea of scientists, I think, with the general public, there's this idea that, you know, or anti-science people, I don't know what you call
it.
That, you know, we're getting together and we're coming up with these ideas when we're harder on each other.
Or they're like, Obama's telling you what to go do research on.
And we don't just get funding from the government. We get there's funding from all over the place. I applied for a Gates Foundation grant, and there's tons of places that are funding. Yes, a majority of it comes from the NIH, but the peers, the people that are deciding who gets the money are our peers, right?
Yeah.
They're the same people that
read
our papers and tell us to go do more experiments
or
it sucks.
Or replicate it themselves. Yeah. Or
do something different because this is going nowhere. You know,
Yeah.
So speaking of your field, Nick, you wanted to, before we get to the five questions, I feel like, you know, we ought to get this thing that you wanted to talk about.
All right. So my Latin's rusty. What?
I don't know, all I know is the zombie fungus.
It's Ophiocordyceps unilateralis.
There you go.
Wow. Well done. Well
I could like sound them out really
I'm good
slow.
With
so it's, yeah, it's a fungus that infects ants and hijacks their brain and...
Yeah, it's actually an order. And I've seen this guy, the guy that's researching this talk a couple of times, and I just saw him in June at the American Society for Microbiology meeting. And it was cool. They had a whole section on microbes and how they affect our behavior, or affect behavior, and this is one of them. And so what it is these ants somehow are infected with spores, and they make their nests high up in trees. Mm-hmm. And so they start to wander around kind of aimlessly. After a while, they fall out of the tree and land on the ground. And then so they manage to wander to these plants, climb up the plant, bite the underside of a leaf, where they then die. And then this fungus then sprouts basically a fruiting body, which is kind of like a mushroom, mm-hmm. a spore-filled fruiting body out of their heads. And so what he showed was that... this fungus is slowly atrophying their brain and their muscle system. So what happens is when they fall out of the tree and they go to bite down on the underside of a leaf, it's like lockjaw for the ants. So it bites down, and because of their muscles have been destroyed by this fungus, they can't release it.
Oh, wow.
So they actually end up staying there
starved
and being...
starved to death, kind of, like...
Yeah, they're
to
just...
To plant this.
They can't do anything, so... And
so
it
can...
Yeah, so this fruiting body can then come out, and it can release its spores, and they can spread. And the weirdest thing was is that he found that, I think it's... They when they mapped out where they found the ants under these trees, they're all in, like, the same general direction.
Oh,
and
wow.
Most of them are in the same general direction.
Oh.
Like, I think it was north... It was either northeast or northwest of the tree.
Are they biting the same leaves, or does it just happen to be that when they, that that's just the next thing they try
it's
to go do?
All, you know, they found this on every continent. And
wow.
It's a real, it's an order of,
yeah.
of you know, it's a distinct group of fungi that are doing
yeah.
this. It's not just one. And different ant species that,
that's
that have the same thing. So
anything other
and
than
I would
ants?
Assume that the have the fungi adapted to the specific ant species?
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if they know that yet, if
okay.
they found it anywhere else.
Hmm.
And, you know, they're just kind of, it's pretty new. I mean, I think he's only been studying it for, you know, maybe 7 or 8 years. I don't
That's
think
not,
it's been
yeah.
very long. Yeah.
So, but I mean, I think the really important thing that we come away with this, you know, in the way that the fungi works, that the chances for, like, a human zombie apocalypse based on this fungi seem pretty low. Wouldn't you say?
But what if someone
yes.
were to
because
synthesize a chemical from the fungus because they were trying to, like, have eternal life? Because I played the zombie game, and that's kind of what happened.
But the thing is, all they're going to do if it's a human is they're going to, like, attach the underside of a leaf.
So
I mean, I think that the risk
being
to other humans...
Being that I've studied a fungus that infects the brain,
yeah.
I'll have to tell you, they don't turn into zombies. They certainly don't... go after you. They just kind of get headaches and then die.
Oh,
sort of like the lamest zombie ever.
Now everybody who has a headache is going to be like, do I have that fungus?
Oh my god,
that
fungus.
Just a bunch of quote-unquote zombies that are like,
yeah.
my head,
oh.
And then they just whine
it's,
a lot and they die.
It's my brain.
Nick.
Oh, no,
that's
no
good.
Fun.
Boy, that's the rest of my life right there, by the way. That's that, those jokes.
All right, I think it's time for five
yeah,
questions.
Yeah, five
you
questions.
Do you want to start there, Molly?
I will. So
question
we always ask
one.
Our guests five questions. And question one is, what's the best movie you've seen in, like, the last 30 days? Doesn't have to have been a new movie.
Like, in the theater, at home, anywhere.
Anything at all.
Oh, that's a really good question. I think I've only seen one movie in the last
Oh, all right. What,
well,
was,
what
it?
Was
it?
It
was Brave, which was
awesome.
Oh, I thought it was a great movie.
We still haven't seen it.
I know, I need to
I
see it.
So I can't say anything because it's spoilers, but
I really
enjoyed
it
too.
I thought it was nicely done. I mean, not great for really young kids, but...
sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
My kids are 12 and 7, and they were, well...
I would say much younger than 7.
Yeah,
I think it can
yeah
be
that's probably
scary.
True.
Scary.
A little scary.
The bear I've ever heard of is...
There's the big... Not there. There are two bears, and one of them is pretty spooky.
Yeah, terrible. Terrifying.
All right, Nick,
yeah.
do you want to go next? Just
sure.
the second one there.
So, who's your favorite atheist character?
Character?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Previous answers will say that, like, Tim has gave the answer of Dexter.
Someone
said...
I think Easy.
Easy's great. He's quite a character.
That's that was kind of what the...
You know, it's Bishop. I don't know.
Yeah.
Bishop from Aliens.
From Aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
totally.
You know, I mean, he's an android, and
we know David was an atheist.
We
so
know
I
David
think,
was
yeah.
an atheist.
Yeah,
and I'm pretty
he,
sure.
I think you could say Bishop was.
Sure, I'm pretty sure Ash was an atheist. So.
Isn't there a
yeah,
line? Some isn't there some line? I think where Bishop says something about your God or something. Like doesn't that's always a good that's always a good tip.
But
off
well, I should know.
An
I just I watched Aliens.
Yeah.
Right, just recently.
I haven't watched it in so long.
I need to watch it again.
But all right, I think we'll accept Bishop. Bishop's a good character, so I like Bishop.
Saw the hobby one here.
All right, what is your geekiest hobby?
Because
you have a lot of time for that.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, see, I've spent a lot of time playing, recently, now that I actually have time since I graduated,
yeah.
I'm playing a little bit more video games. So I finally finished off Portal and Portal 2.
Oh,
awesome.
Are awesome.
Two.
And was working on Alice, The Descent into Madness, which is a great one.
Is that the sequel to the
yeah.
Rare Dwiggies?
Yeah. And board games. I think board games. I'm a tabletop game.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah?
What's
yeah.
your favorite tabletop game?
You know, I've been really liking Mansions of Madness. Shout out to...
It's a lot of fun.
There.
Yeah. It's
What's that one?
Mansions of Madness is... It's kind of like Betrayal at House on the Hill.
Yeah.
But it's in the Arkham world. It's a
okay.
fantasy flight game.
Okay.
One person's the keeper, which
yeah.
is kind of like the GM. And then everyone
That's
else is...
That's the obstacle for me with that game, is one person kind of... gets excluded in a way.
Yeah.
I prefer Arkham where it's like you're playing against the game, but it's an automated.
Yeah, and I do usually prefer like the. I like anything that's collaborative. Yeah. So.
Elder Sign's a good one for that. If you
haven't
played that.
Yeah, I haven't played that
it's
one.
It's fun. It's
really
fun.
Letters from Whitechapel is a good one.
Oh, I've heard of that game.
It's everyone versus one, where it's one person is Jack the Ripper and the other police officers that have to go catch.
That's awesome.
So that's a good one. But yeah, we play. I mean, we have when we have game night, we just pick out whatever looks good.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
Last time it was Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah,
Battlestar Galactica. We know so many people who are just obsessed with that game.
It's a great game. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right. So, what's your favorite sandwich?
I'd say a grilled veggie sandwich.
Grilled veggie sandwich, like a muffaletta kind of.
Yeah, kind of. You know,
what
zucchini.
Veggies? Oh, zucchini. Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of peppers, but they come along with the zucchini usually, so I just kind of tolerate them.
In the same mix.
Is there like any sauce that makes it good for you? No,
just
straight up veggies.
Yeah.
Like pita bread or regular bread?
Regular bread.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds good.
I could eat that.
Yeah, like toasted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A little
good.
Cheese on it.
Yeah, ooh, now we're getting. I'm liking this. All right. All right.
And then our last question is, what's the stupidest thing you've ever heard or comment you've received regarding your atheism or skepticism? And I think for you, we'd probably allow
scientific inquiry.
As a scientist.
I think it was one that I probably overheard. I used to be a TA or a tutor for the general biology program.
Oh.
And this guy was like, you're telling me I came from some slime on a rock. And I'm like, well, you didn't come. I mean, that was like your great, you know, ancestor, maybe, but we all co-evolved. I mean, obviously this guy was taking, you know, a college-level biology course, but just had, like, no concept.
Personally offended that you were calling him slime? Or is that kind
that,
of, like...
Yeah, he was, like, personally offended by it. And then,
what a dick.
And I remember...
It's ridiculous.
Well, I remember one of the TAs I was teaching the course just turned in and said, well, you believe in evolution or you believe in magic?
Yeah.
I
want that in a bumper sticker.
You believe in evolution or
you believe in magic.
That's my favorite tagline ever.
Yeah, that's great.
That's good.
Yeah, I don't understand. That statement, you're telling me I came from blank.
Like, I didn't come from nowhere.
Well, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
You came from your parents, you know?
Yeah.
If you want to go all the way and presume that somehow I'm now telling you that you have something in common with that slime, I guess you do, but I'm not saying that you are slime off of a rock.
We're talking millions and millions of years here. Our lives are just a blip on the... On the time scale here,
sure.
I mean, it's
one ring
it's,
on the tree.
Yeah.
why you're freaking out about where your species came from? And I think it comes from this misguided idea that humans are
supreme.
That we are like somehow the ultimate result of evolution instead of one.
An aberration.
We are one of the ultimate sources since just about every other species on the planet has been working on it as long as we have.
If you think about it, we're the odd man out. We're the ones with thumbs and sentience, really, in that sense. So, like, we're the weird.
Well, at this point, we've been using technology and science to take ourselves out of the loop. And
we're starting to see the effects.
It's true.
It seems like we're diverging into two different species, like the people who care enough to go learn about things, and the other people who are like, you know, if you want to look at Idiocracy,
to me, Idiocracy is not entirely a comedy. I find it a horror movie.
I do see it moving. That's
tale.
I mean, yeah, unfortunately,
it just
seems to be moving in that general direction.
It's like, well, what's going to be the next Homo sapiens? I mean, that's the thing. There's going to be someone that comes along.
I feel like everyone, maybe I'm being like overly optimistic, but I feel like just in the same way that throughout all of human history, there's always been someone saying, like, the end is nigh, like, we're going to see it, the world's going to end. Like, there's always been that person. Like, I feel like, I hope that every generation has always been like, things these days, like, humankind's going to a ruin, women's skirts are shorter than ever, what's going to happen?
Well, I mean, and look at just, like, the 60s, where interracial marriage was, that's the slippery slope. It's I don't see people marrying their dogs,
and then
can't give consent.
Like, 90 years ago, it was that demon rum and that demon gin, angering up the blood, you know?
Christopher Jones talks about a comic that he really enjoys that I've never seen it, but it sounds great, I got look it up and maybe put it on the show notes. But it's a one-panel comic, and it's got, like, the evolution, the steps of evolution.
Yeah.
You know, going up the stairs, and it's got, you know, the last two steps are, you know, Cro-Magnon and then human. Mm-hmm. And then there's a step above it, and the human's looking at the step above it. And the guy behind him's like, I was wondering when you'd notice that.
That's great. So. Awesome. Well, Laura, thanks so much for being on our show.
Thanks.
And it was really great talking to you. And good luck in your North Carolina adventures.
Thanks.
Yeah, I hope that goes really well
for you. Yeah, I'm going to miss you. We still have Edger.
And I'll be back for Convergence.
Awesome.
Great.
I've got my ticket.
Excellent.
And so.
Great.
All right,
cool
so.
Panels.
Yeah. Oh, so we're planning to do a whole bunch of them, so.
Sweet.
All right, so yeah, we're Geeks Without God. You can visit us at geekswithoutgod.com. We have other podcasts there for you to listen to, and also lots of blog posts, and you can read about why we're geeks, why we're atheists. Thanks, guys. Thanks to Melissa Kerscher for our totally sweet logo.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts on geekswithoutgod.com, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Oh, mushrooms, huh? And we're like, not that kind of mushroom.